Welcome back to Midpoint, friends. I'm your host, Shelley Reback, with your mid-morning, mid-week, mid-Florida source for news and public affairs. We are in the most dangerous days of the most dangerous season in Florida now. It's the end of the Florida legislative season, when the Republican-controlled supermajority in Tallahassee tries to sneak by us the worst of the worst legislation that they've been massaging throughout the session. This is when it's particularly important to pay attention to the many ways they will try to make life in Florida less affordable, less safe, and less responsive to what our communities may actually want. We have a really important show for you in that regard today, because we are going to be talking about land use with my guests, Kim Dinkins, Policy and Planning Director for 1000 Friends of Florida, and Laura Lawson, land use attorney and formerly legislative aide to then Hillsborough County Commissioner Pat Kemp. I think it's fair to say that most Floridians want to have a say in how their neighborhoods and lands are developed. They may not want a high-rise building next door or a nuclear plant around the block from them, but there are a number of proposals in the legislature that would restrict local municipalities from having control over these kinds of decisions, and we are going to talk about that right after our news nuggets of the week. So before the regular session ends next week, let's take a look at where we are right now and what the legislature is cooking up for us before the handkerchief drops. The domestic terrorist bill that I've been harping on for weeks is just a House vote away from DeSantis's signature into law. We now know from the Tampa Bay Times that DeSantis's staffers themselves wrote the bill to give the governor more power to punish protesters, especially students. So it seems that the next stop will be the courts when they hear the First Amendment claims against this legislation. Next, in an ominous preview of the midterm elections, the Florida House has approved a, quote, election integrity bill that would require voters to prove their citizenship to register to vote. And they also removed some of the forms of voter identification that are accepted at the polls, including eliminating student ID cards as an acceptable form of identification. The Florida Senate also has its own version of the bill, Senate Bill 1334, that's moving toward a floor vote now. Among other things, it would also require a passport or a birth certificate as proof of citizenship to register to vote. You know, Florida already requires voters to be U.S. citizens, right? This sort of show us your papers measure would disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of eligible citizens, including students, seniors, and those with disabilities, by creating onerous and expensive documentation requirements, especially for cohorts of people who are generally Democratic voters. Let's face it, many people do not have easy access to their birth certificates or to purchase a passport, which they would need to prove they are eligible to vote under these changes. In fact, many elderly Black people were not even issued birth certificates because they were not born in hospitals due to segregation laws in the 1940s and 50s. This is clearly a measure to try to disenfranchise young people, students, Black people, and poor people, and probably suppress votes for Democrats. If the Senate bill reaches the floor and is approved, it will go to the governor for signature and go into effect July 1st, before the midterms. Next, the Florida Senate has also passed a bill to place new restrictions on public sector unions. Senator Carlos Guillermo Smith from Orlando said it best, quote, "I think we really need to be honest about what SB 1296 really is. This is the next step in a years-long campaign to eliminate public sector unions in Florida," close quote. This bill is strongly backed by the Anti-Union Freedom Foundation, whose target is mainly the teachers' unions, but it also sweeps in public hospital doctors and sanitation workers. Teachers' unions are known to generally back Democratic candidates, so I, for one, am not surprised that this bill exempts firefighters, police, and other first responders who generally vote Republican. This is yet another measure to build on the anti-union restrictions that lawmakers passed in 2023 when they eliminated payroll deductions for teachers' union dues and required higher numbers of paying union members for a union to be certified. And speaking of schooling and teaching, I would be remiss if I did not bring to your attention the fact that Florida has deemed all of its existing Intro to Sociology textbooks to be illegal, and the state has now produced its own textbook. The new volume was created after a state review by the Florida Department of Education and the Florida Board of Governors found that existing course materials for Intro to Sociology violated a law prohibiting general education courses from teaching about systemic inequality. So far, at least two universities have adopted this new textbook. This follows Senate Bill 266 in 2023, when the Florida legislature prohibited any general education courses from including topics that, quote, distort significant historical events, teach identity politics, or are, quote, based on theories that systemic racism, sexism, oppression, and privilege are inherent in the institutions of the United States and were created to maintain social, political, and economic inequities. The state's creation of the new textbook is the latest battle in Florida's ongoing campaign to assert control over university curricula. The Florida Department of Education has taken special pains to discredit the field of sociology, which the American Sociological Association defines as the study of social life, social change, and the social courses and consequences of human behavior. Leaving the study of sociology to the Florida Board of Governors is, well, it's insane, because that body is made up of political appointees from the business world, from insurance executives to roofing contractors. They're no educators, and they are now dictating to professors how they must teach their courses, and they're even providing them with state-created textbooks for doing so. To me, that's insane. Well, while I let my blood pressure recede back into safe levels, let me reintroduce our guests who are going to explain to us today more about what the legislature is doing about our Florida lands, which they are charged with the responsibility of protecting. First, Kim Dinkins is Florida Policy and Planning Director of 1,000 Friends of Florida. Welcome to Midpoint, Kim.
Thank you for having me.
And Laura Lawson, land use attorney and formerly legislative aide to then Hillsborough County Commissioner Pat Kemp, is here with us. And I'm happy to have you too, Laura.
Thank you so much, Shelley. I'm really glad to be here to talk about this.
Let me start with you, Kim. Tell us about 1,000 Friends of Florida. What's your organization's mission and what specific issues does 1,000 Friends of Florida address?
We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan smart growth advocacy organization. We advocate for things like smart community planning, public participation in the planning process, and we monitor legislation that deals with growth management, water conservation and water pollution, land conservation, transportation, and resilience type activities.
So pretty much you focus on everything that goes into building a community, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Is that right? And part of your role, I guess, as policy and planning director is to meet with legislators and to try to influence them. What is your goal when you do that?
Our goal when we are meeting with legislators is really to ensure that they understand the community planning process and to try to eliminate efforts to take away opportunities for public participation and land use planning at the local level.
Well, that brings us to a very important point, doesn't it? Because it seems like much of what the legislature is doing in this session, having to do with land use, it involves preemption. In other words, taking away local control from our local communities over their built environment, right?
Yeah, this has kind of been a trend that has been ongoing for about a decade. this year is no exception. We've seen hundreds of bills filed, again, over the last decade that would remove some of that local control.
Yeah. So when you don't want a high rise built next door to your one-story historic bungalow, or you don't want a nuclear plant around the corner from you, odds are that you used to be able to go to your local municipality and complain if those things were incorporated into a community plan. Now it seems like that's becoming much more difficult, right?
It is, but local governments have been required for many decades to have a plan for growth. So that's their comprehensive plan. And oftentimes, most any time the local government adopts a comprehensive plan, it has to allow for certain uses. So when we move into a historic subdivision that maybe has been there for a long time, probably before a local comprehensive plan, we sometimes have to defend those areas from different types of growth. However, a local government also has planned for things like power plants and high rises and other places within their comprehensive plan. So really what we look for is to allow the local government to designate where those spaces, where those things occur, but then also allow for that public input if a proposal comes forward that is incompatible with that plan.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the specific legislation that's pending in our legislature this session that talks about these issues that influences what local governments can and cannot do with regard to their land use. One of those bills is House Bill 299. Can we talk about that? Laura, do you want to tell us what House Bill 299 is all about?
This is the Blue Ribbon Projects bill, and it is moving forward both in the House and Senate to some extent. It's also a preemption bill. It talks about desirable sounding things, reserves of environmental lands, affordable housing. But what it really is the legislature reaching down and dictating to local communities that they have to accept certain large projects of over 15,000 acres or more.
So, it sounds good on the surface. Is that what you're saying? Because it's intended to, for example, require the development of more housing. We have a housing crisis in Florida. So, you know, who doesn't want more housing, right? Why would we oppose that?
The concern with the affordable housing piece is a trend I've seen for a few years in the legislature. Everybody wants to see, most people want to see more affordable housing. We all know it's a problem. But what happens is the way that it is defined in the legislation. This bill requires a combination of things called middle market housing, affordable housing, but it's not all what we think of when we're talking about affordable housing. And it also doesn't require specific amounts of the units to be affordable in the way that we would normally think of them being affordable. In a way, it's just setting up a way for them to build housing, call it affordable, but really have it be more market rate.
And what's the position of 1,000 Friends of Florida on this bill?
Yeah, we have opposed the Blue Ribbons Projects bill throughout the session, and I will say that it didn't sail through committees, but it went through all of its committees, and both versions, the House version and the Senate version, were ready for floor votes. The House didn't pass this legislation, and the Senate has put it on a temporary postponement. So if it doesn't pass today or tomorrow, chances are good we're going to see it again next year instead of being implemented this year. But we were very concerned because what it does is it eliminates any of that local oversight by saying that these projects that are 15,000 acres or more can go anywhere within a county. It doesn't, again, look at those designated land uses that the community has established in their comprehensive plans. It also didn't, the way that it was sold was more about combining affordable housing with land conservation. But the land conservation piece was also very rough in that it didn't require any conservation easements or anything like that. So while we saw some support for this type of legislation on both sides of the aisle. I think that there was a general agreement that it wasn't quite baked and ready. But for us, we would probably always oppose legislation like this because, again, it takes away that local control and contributes to sprawl.
Yeah, let's talk about that piece. Laura, when you worked as a legislative aide for a county commissioner, one of the big issues that I remember came up a lot was development outside the urban service area. I want to understand this Blue Ribbon Projects bill in that context. As I understand it, Kim, Laura, this bill would require development of 15,000 acres anywhere, regardless of where the county has designated their urban service area. Why is it important to keep development within the urban service area and not anywhere that a developer has a big piece of land?
It's important for several reasons. Probably the most two important reasons are having natural lands exist within your county and protecting them. But the second really important reason is the control of costs. The urban services area boundary says this is where we're going to have urban, suburban, even what we would call in many cases exurban development as opposed to rural development. And it also places a limitation on how much pipes the county has to put in the ground, how much roads they have to build. It's a way of controlling the costs of government that follow every time you put down a new subdivision out in the far reaches of the county.
So really what we're talking about when we're talking about the urban service area is where the county's expending money on services, where they put sewer, where they put water, where they put roads, where they put a fire station, a police substation, those kinds of things, right?
That's exactly right.
So if those things don't exist out in the far reaches of the county and some developer wants to plop down a new subdivision, the county then is responsible for supplying it with those services for the most part, right? They can try to negotiate, you have to put in your own access road or something like that, right? But for the most part, the county's on the hook for those county services that people will pay their county taxes for when they move into that subdivision. So that's one, as I understand it, that's the main reason why, you know, if we allow development outside the urban service area, we are contributing to, greater costs for everybody in the county. Our property taxes in the county would go up. Now, of course, one of the things we haven't really addressed is the fact that this legislative session, they want to get rid of property taxes completely, which would mean nobody would be getting those services. There would be no funding for those services, at least. But at least under the current way that services are funded, contributing to sprawl by allowing new subdivisions anywhere in the county would be a really expensive proposition for most county citizens of every county. This isn't unique to Hillsborough, right, Kim?
That's correct. I mean, it would be statewide legislation. And we understand that there have been efforts to compile these large types of tracts of land, 15,000 acres or more. We have some very large landowners. And of course, there is the issue of allowing them to be able to make an income or be able to realize some economic benefit to owning that much land. But this isn't designed for your typical landowner in Florida. What we're seeing is more and more outside of the state entities come in and try to gather up all this land so that they can and then pass this type of legislation.
Really? So these are not like eighth generation Floridian families that had large tracts of like cattle pastures or orange groves or something.
That's right. This is, again, designed for those 15,000 acre tracts. And most farms in Florida are a couple hundred acres. You know, they're definitely not in the 15,000 acre range.
Wow. So, okay. you know, it's clear that Florida does need more affordable housing, that we all agree on that. My understanding is a way that this kind of bill has been promoted has been like, this is against the NIMBY people. This is against the, you know, that this is a way to get around people who are saying, not in my neighborhood. I don't want affordable housing in my neighborhood. Because again, if you're building affordable housing within the urban service area, it's going to be in somebody's existing neighborhood, right? And so there is a lot of NIMBY activity. And, you know, one way that this kind of a bill is being sold to the public is by saying, look, if you don't want it in your neighborhood, it has to be somewhere. Right?
That's how they're selling it. But what's interesting about it is it doesn't even guarantee that that much affordable housing would be built. Like I was saying before, is it includes what do they call that? Middle market housing, which really just is talking about four squares, townhome, you know, these smaller townhome type properties, but it doesn't guarantee that someone of low income is going to live in them. And on top of that, if you're going to put it out in the middle of a rural area, they're probably not going to have access to bus service. They're not going to have access to the things that people who need affordable housing need in many cases. So it's just not a comprehensive way to accomplish the stated goals.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to respond to that as well, and that the bill itself doesn't even require that there is housing. So it could be industrial.
Tell us about that.
It just is a miss, I guess, in the way that the bill is written, but doesn't require housing. And so what you could end up with are thousands of acres of warehouses or industrial type activities. That was something that was raised by legislators when they were debating on the bill.
Oh, so this is where we get to the point that the bill is really half-baked, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And in fact, wasn't there a legislative study done on this bill, too, that opposed it? A legislative research committee study that suggested that it should be opposed?
So each bill gets a legislative analysis before it goes in front of a committee. And I think what you might be referring to is that one of those analyses or a couple of them identified the technical insufficiencies of the bill.
Now, here's the $64,000 question, or who knows what the monetary amount is, but who's in favor of this? Who supports this bill?
I would say somebody probably has a 15,000 acre project that they would like to put. I don't know exactly who it is, but oftentimes this kind of legislation in recent years has been focused on some deal that somebody wants to make that they just can't get through their local government. So now they're paying lobbyists to go to the legislature, pass legislation that lasts a year or two, and then get the project done and get their money.
Wow. Oh, wow. And I don't know if we follow the money, if we would find contributions to who are the sponsors of this legislation?
The two sponsors are Senator Stan McClain out of Marion County area and Lauren Mello, who is in the House from the Naples area.
Okay. All right. I want to turn your attention to something else about this bill that disturbed me, and that was the public hearing section that changed whether or how community members could have input into what was happening in their communities in terms of the built environment.
Thank you for noticing that. I thought that was really sneaky. It lowers the threshold for how many members of a local government would have to make these impactful, comprehensive planning decisions. And for example, in Hillsborough County, we have required historically a supermajority for some of these really impactful decisions that increase density in the rural area or something like that. But now we've got the legislature dictating that it could be based on a majority of the members present. That's going to give developers arguments that they don't even have to meet the local threshold that's been set. that they don't need as many votes as they did before.
Oh, well, that's a scary proposition, especially when it seems like, as Kim pointed out, it doesn't even have to involve building housing. It could be a nuclear plant. It could be a bunch of, warehouse storage. It could it be another concentration detention camp for immigrants?
I wouldn't speculate there, but I would want to point out that the language that Laura has mentioned is actually in a different bill. So whether or not the Blue Ribbons proposal passes, if the other bill passes, it would apply to any land development, land change that comes before a board.
Oh, my goodness. Let's talk about that. What bill is that?
That is House Bill 399 or Senate Bill 208. And that is actually up on the Senate floor today.
Oh, so it could be passing even as we speak. We don't know. Right?
Right.
What's the feeling on that? You know, Kim, you just came down to be with us today from Tallahassee yesterday. What's your sense of whether or not that's going to pass?
I don't know that I can speculate on that, but I will say that there have been a couple of amendments filed to that bill that would take those provisions out. And so if those pass, that would be a good sign.
That would be good, right? Yeah. So, okay, so this bill would basically kneecap the ability of local governments to require a higher threshold for certain development that they, want to... So your ability to influence your local, the people closest to you, your local government, your county commissioners, even your city council, which deals with development within the city limits, this would apply to all of those boards then, right?
Yes. And many have created these supermajority requirements. I believe that Kim was also mentioning earlier in Orange County. And another county, Seminole, was it you said? They've created those to ensure that these important decisions, which are often very hard to revoke. I mean, typically the thing about land use decisions is once a local board grants a property owner the right to use their property in a certain way, they're not going to be able to take that back. And so in most cases. And so... Yes. I mean, lowering the threshold just makes the decision, that irrevocable decision, more easy to make.
And so that this type of a bill that would that allow a community that has a comprehensive plan, for example, would this override the comprehensive plan? Would it make it easier for a developer, for example, to get an exemption from the comprehensive plan?
Well, for what this bill, on top of talking about these voting thresholds, the other thing it does is it proposes a study to do away with the urban services area boundary.
Completely. Wow.
So that's what they would like to do. And that would impact the ability to do land use planning anywhere that has one, and we have one, and I'm telling you, we need it. We need that urban services area boundary desperately.
That would pretty much, listen, I'm a rookie on these issues, but that to me sounds like that would be the end of land use planning, wouldn't it? I mean, isn't the whole point of land use planning to plan for things like where we have sewer, where we have roads, where we have fire stations, things like that? Isn't that the point? Kim?
It would certainly make it more difficult to make those decisions. I think that what it also does is it reduces the certainty of our Florida citizens who have purchased homes in a certain area because they expect a certain quality of life or a certain lifestyle. And so then less guardrails are placed or able to be enforced that would protect that type of lifestyle, both in the urban area and in the rural areas. So I think we have to really recognize that those growth boundaries, whether they're rural boundaries or they're urban service boundaries, they do provide a good level of determination of where things will happen. And I'll also mention that in Orange County, just recently, the rural boundary that's kind of the impetus for some of this was a voter referendum. That's a charter county, and that decision of implementing a higher standard for land use changes was put to the people, and they voted 73-70, I can't recall the exact number, percent to put that limitation on themselves. So in this way, they are undoing not just what a local government has determined, but what the people of Florida also want.
Have voted for what they voted for.
Correct.
It would basically make their vote meaningless. And I think what you've discussed about, you know, the determinative effect of having an urban service area is really important. I mean, there are people who want an urban environment, who want to live, let's say, in Hillsborough County, say in Water Street, for example, you know, which is a modern development with high rises and live, work, play environment, you know, carless, an attempt to be carless environment. And then there are people that want to live out in the boonies. You know, they want to have animals. They want to have, horse paths or trails or whatever, and horses and maybe even cows. Those are people who want to live in a rural environment. Their environment would not be safe from this kind of development under these kinds of changes, right?
Oh, it's very concerning when I think about our rural communities of Balm, Odessa. We have all these communities, and they have something important. We can't just let these developers turn the entire rural area into a massive subdivision.
Wow. Well, what are we going to do about affordable housing then? What is the kind of thing that 1,000 Friends of Florida, for example, does recommend to address things like our housing crisis?
Yeah, we have advocated in many places that where we have urban areas that have been designated, that we should be looking for ways to increase density in those places. A simple increase in built density of, you know, 1 to 3 units per acre could really save a lot of rural lands within the state.
Yes.
Okay. And to do that, to increase density in the urban areas, we would need to make certain zoning changes, right, Laura?
Sure. Or the city comprehensive plan. Yes. I mean, it's really kind of like gardening. If you think of like right plant, right place, you know, it's like we have places where density makes sense and we have places where less density makes sense. So it's not entirely like math. It's more of an art. But yes, we need that kind of flexibility.
All right. You are listening to Midpoint on WMNF Tampa, and we are talking today about the land use legislation pending in the Florida legislature and how it may impact our built environment in Tampa Bay with my guests, Kim Dinkins of 1,000 Friends of Florida and land use attorney Laura Lawson. So if you have questions or comments about these issues, give us a call at 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885 if you've got some thoughts about these land use issues. And I do have a call here. I'm going to bring Jerry on the air. Jerry from Tampa, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking my call. You touched on this topic and it just really struck a chord for me, and I want to emphasize this is theoretical on my part, but I just think you're onto something here. So I've been in Hawaii for a long time, graduated University of Florida in landscape architecture, and so I've interfaced with planning and architecture, and I've been in Hawaii for about 4 years, come back. I'm going to be leaving again as soon as possible, but come back to St. Pete. And I remember I'm calling in the WMNF about, like, let's just call the University of Florida and the planning department and get their input. And it just didn't work. I mean, it just didn't work.
What did you want their input on, Jerry?
On all the planning, any of the planning interface issues that you're talking about now, which are critical. And my observation is it's just not working. I mean, it's just not happening. It's like it's gone. And then you look at the university, the decimation of the university system and the current administration with, you know, just some kind of dominant directional rule about how things go, then you don't have a planning department. There is no planning.
Well, that's kind of what we're talking about here.
You're right.
You know,
you're
if
right.
a number of
you're
these right. bills pass, it seems like right. the whole concept of planning is kind of going to go out the window.
Well, it might already be here. I mean, maybe we're a little bit behind the ball. But you know what? Let's just put the word out. And hey, all you planners, start calling in. All you university planners, tell us we're totally wrong.
Well, let me just steer this a little bit, Jerry.
Sure.
You know, what I hear you suggesting is that people in Florida, citizens in Florida, and particularly people with planning experience, need to express their concerns about this legislation. And so where they need to do that at this moment, you know, we're a little behind the eight ball because the session's ending next week, right, Cam?
Right.
Friday.
Right.
Friday. Okay, the session's ending Friday, so we're a little bit behind the eight ball. But, you know, the issue is who you put in the Florida legislature. Do they care about these issues? You know, we're going to have a midterm election, and all of the legislators are going to be up for election, right?
Right.
Most of them. Some of
right.
them are term limited, but they're going to be racing. Races for the Florida House and the Florida Senate. And in fact, we have a special election here in the Hillsborough County area on March 24th for Senate District 14. And you're going to have a choice to vote on people who care about these issues one way or another. And you
right.
should really educate yourself and make your position known to the people who are running. So
absolutely.
I thank you for your...
Can I make one final point?
Okay, one final point.
It's kind of like the top-down thing. If we don't have an educational system or professionals, you go to an architect if you need good architecture. Now, if you can do it yourself, great. But if you can't do it yourself, you go to an architect or you go to a planner or you go to an engineer. So if we don't have people in position that are going to speak up in those top down positions.
I hear you, Jerry.
I've
got a queue I've got to get to, but thank you for your call.
And hey, planners, call in. Let's hear from you.
All right, appreciate it.
Okay,
I've got Sarah in St. Pete. Sarah in St. Pete, you're on the air. Sarah?
Yeah, this is Sarah.
Okay.
I'm not in St. Pete. I'm in Dade City.
Oh, Dade City. Sorry about that. But can you speak up, please?
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Speak up.
Okay. So the reason I called is I told your screener, this is a very timely discussion for me because I'm trying to determine whether or not I'm going to stay in the state of Florida. I'm not a native Floridian. But what the county commissioners have done to Pasco County is just horrendous. I sat through a traffic light yesterday at an intersection where they just keep building these subdivisions. Northeast Hillsborough County and Pasco County, I don't know why they're doing it. But my point is how can we, and I used to work in land planning decades ago, but my point is what county in Florida is safe? I want to buy a single family home with a piece of property. And I want room, as you said, for animals, particularly
Sarah,
for animal sanctuary.
Sarah, let me answer your question, or let me have our guests answer your question. But it seems like the answer to your question is if these kinds of bills pass, no place in Florida is safe. Is that right? I see Kim nodding her head.
I would just say there are local governments who have tried to implement these types of things. Orange County, the rural boundaries that we're seeing, the farmland preservation areas that are designated on these maps that the local governments have to maintain. But again, if there are continue to be these preemptions at the state level, we'll see less and less of those be implemented.
Well, that's your answer, Sarah. Sorry to say, but there you have it. All right. Thank you for calling in. I really appreciate your comments. I'm going to bring Daryl in St. Pete on the air. Daryl, you're on the air.
Yes. Have you utilized the Florida State Constitution, Article 2, Section 7, Natural Resources and Scenic Beauty? I'll read just the first paragraph. Shall be the policy of the state to conserve and protect its natural resources and scenic beauty. Adequate provision shall be made by law for the abatement of air and water pollution and of excessive and unnecessary noise, and for the conservation and protection of natural resources.
Wow, great point, Daryl. Great point. So, Kim, isn't this one of the things that 1,000 Friends of Florida, tries to, enforce?
Yes, that's what we would advocate for. That article has been addressed in certain in different legal challenges, and so that's the kind of the where it goes back to the courts.
So, can we assume that should these types of bills pass? That there would be legal challenges under the Constitution, under the section that Daryl has just brought to our attention?
I'm not an attorney, so I don't want to.
I used to be an attorney. Let me just say, I predict legal challenges based on what Daryl has read. Daryl, thank you so much.
For sure.
Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. We really appreciate your comments. I will say I predict some legal challenges. I'm not sure who the plaintiff would be, whether it would be 1,000 Friends of Florida or individuals whose land use is going to be affected by it. I don't know, but I predict legal challenges. All right, let's see who else we have here. I have Chris from Gainesville. Chris, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. I think I just wanted to emphasize one comment that was made earlier by one of the guests, or perhaps it was the host, that you can follow the money. And it seems to me there's a dearth of the kind of investigative reporting that used to go on by the folks at the St. Pete Times, of course, now the Tampa Bay Times, I guess. But they can follow the money fairly easily. There are laws that require the contributors to campaigns for these legislators to file reports that show exactly who they are and what money they're giving to whom, which legislator that would be responsible for these kinds of land use planning decisions. And I don't see any kind of journalism that targets that these days, that exactly who has the conflicts of interest. And the laws also require that any possible conflict of interest be reported. Whether or not it's an actual conflict, you must report the fact that you've got an association with or contributions from people in certain industries if you're going to be a legislator that's using those or targeting laws that affect those industries. So I wish that there was more investigative reporting on the part of the folks like the Poynter Center and some of the other associates that WMNF works with. I just don't see the kind of investigative reporting that might help. Thank you for listening.
All right, Chris, thank you for your comments. Well, he speaks to my own concerns, my own deep concerns about the lack of investigative reporting about what goes on in the Florida legislature, about conflicts of interest, about where the money is coming from. In general, we lack more local reporting. The Tampa Bay Times, they've done some really great work on some things like the Hope Florida scandal, for example. But the fact is we used to have beat reporters sitting in every county commission meeting, in city council meetings, and following, what was going on with these land use decisions that are made locally. And we don't have that anymore. And so it is really hard for citizens to know what is happening with their local governments, let alone in Tallahassee.
I wanted to just comment that on the Blue Ribbons Project bills, there has been an investigative report. You might want to just do a quick Google search on that one.
Well, tell us about it.
Jason Garcia with
Seeking Rents.
Yes.
See, Jason Garcia is a phenomenal investigative reporter who follows very, very deep research into what's happening in the Florida legislature. And I recommend everybody subscribe to his Substack, which is called Seeking Rents. You could get it for free, although supporting him financially makes his, gives him more opportunity to do more and better research. But yeah, go ahead. What's in his report?
He showed that one of the large landowners that has acquired a lot of land in Florida is from the New York area and has acquired a lot of land in the St. John's County.
Mm-hmm. St. John's County. And is this landowner someone who has contributed to Senator McClain, for example, is it, who sponsored this legislation?
They have contributed to a number of campaigns.
a number of campaigns who are now promoting this type of legislation. Come on, don't hold back.
That's what Jason found.
Yeah, okay, yeah, you could credit him. And you don't have to stand by it yourself. You can credit him. But yeah, don't hold back on the information.
I think that is one of the bigger concerns, though, is that we don't have... There are, again, very large landowners in Florida who could take advantage of this. But for the most part, a Blue Ribbon project would probably be compiled from outside investors.
Okay. All right, let me take a call from Bonnie from... east of Bradenton, I guess. Bonnie, you're on the air.
Hi. No, I'm not from Bradenton. I'm from Myakka City.
Oh, I'm sorry. Myakka City. Okay.
Yeah, we're a very rural community east of Bradenton, east of Lakewood Ranch. And the land use issue is very important for citizens to be aware of land use meetings and attend those meetings so that they can band together and speak out against the developers. We've had some real wins here lately in our community because the developers just want to gobble up our land. I live in a community that's very rural, agricultural. I have 5 acres, horses, and the development keeps creeping eastward. And when they put up those little yellow signs, notice of public hearing, that's when you need to go and speak up and speak out and be aware, because there is strength in numbers, and these people that are on these boards, they work for us. We vote them in and we can vote them out.
That's right.
And yes.
Thank you so much, Bonnie, for pointing out that there are, at least today, still opportunities for people to make their voices heard on land use issues, right?
Absolutely. We've had some real wins out here, and we're going to keep on moving forward with our voices, speaking up, speaking out, and joining together. And there is, you know, strength in numbers and power to the people.
I have a comment here, an email here from somebody, from Sue, who wants to know who are the representatives to speak to. Sue, maybe you can give Bonnie, maybe you can give a little guidance to Sue about who to look for in your local community to speak to about these issues.
We just email and call our Board of County Commissioners.
Okay.
And when they meet once a month for their land use meetings, that's when you need to show up. Speak up, show up, and you have to have good representation in your community, and it works. We just saved a canopy road from being... disrupted. The 30 plus residents that live on that road were facing a developer who wanted to rip out all the ancient oaks so that they could get to a parcel of land that they want to develop. And our county commissioners are starting to listen to us and saying no. They will say no to developers.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that.
Vocabulary, and you just have to speak up and speak out and vote.
Vote. Very important. Yeah. Thank you so much, Bonnie, for calling in from Myakka City. Appreciate it. Laura, you are someone who had a deep knowledge of the voice of the community when you were a legislative aide to a county commissioner. I just want your input on what Bonnie was saying about how important it is.
She is absolutely right. I mean, some of our most dramatic and hearings where we had so many people from the community come out, one I really think about was a development along Lithia Pinecrest. People came out doing bird calls. People came out talking about how much they cared about the rural character of their community. And it was so inspiring to me. And people shouldn't give up. You know, even if they don't require a supermajority, we should all just be paying more attention to who we elect to the county commission or the city council and make sure that we force them during the election to talk about these issues. The reality is typically elected officials at the local level, the most impactful things that they do involve land use. Those are the decisions that they make that live on forever. So we have to focus on it.
All right, Kim, anything you want to add about the voice of the public? I mean, it's easy for people to find out who their representatives are in Tallahassee. You can either go to your local supervisor of elections office, put in your name, your date of birth. It'll bring up your voting status, and it'll also tell you who represents you in Tallahassee, and you can make your voice heard to those people. I know that somebody here is asking, how can I find out who to talk to in Tallahassee? That's the easiest way, right?
Yes, and we also have alerts on our website, not to do a shameless plug here.
No, but please, we also, shameless plug. Go ahead.
We have those available on our website. You just type in your address and it will bring up the representatives there.
All right, and if people want to find out more about 1,000 Friends of Florida, how can they do that? It's give us your website.
1-0-0-0-F-O-F. For friendsofflorida.org.
All right. I want to thank my guests today, Kim Dinkins, Planning and Policy Director of 1,000 Friends of Florida, and Laura Lawson, a land use attorney in Tampa. We really appreciate both of you being with us and talking about this important subject that I don't think gets enough attention until it's too late. But that's really all we have time for today. I have a couple of announcements. I want to tell you that next week, in connection with International Women's Month, we'll be talking about the explosion in popularity of the romance genre, about underrepresented authors in that genre, the popularity of romance on TV now, with Bridgerton and Heated Rivalry, and what the business Steamy Lit brings to the genre. I will have as my guest the founder of the Steamy Lit Collective and Steamy Lit Bookstore in Tampa. And if you, my listeners, are comfortable with it, we'll also talk about how the romance genre helps women better understand their own sexuality and pleasure. And we can talk about anything else that you think will be interesting. All right, that's next week. I also want to remind you that we will be taking over the next Wavemakers speaker event on April 8th at 7 p.m. at the Commodore to bring you a fascinating speaker, Robert Feisler is a historian and an author of the multi-award-winning book, American Scare, Florida's Hidden Cold War on Black and Queer Lives. This is the history of Florida's Johns Committee, which was our own little House Un-American Activities Committee that attacked and harassed blacks, queers, gays, integrationists, and progressives of all stripes in the 1950s and 60s. It is a deeply disturbing but very important period in Florida history that has very unfortunate echoes in our politics today. So I'm hoping that I will see you all on April 8th at 7 p.m. at the Commodore Club on 7th Avenue at the edge of Ybor City. Tickets are only $10 in advance from the WMNF Events website. And I'll look forward to seeing you there and talking about the Florida Johns Committee. I also want to remind you that early voting for the District 14 Florida Senate seat will open on March 14th. So you'll have a week for early voting, and then the election day itself is on March 24th. Please, please, please vote in this very important election. Research the candidates. There's Brian Nathan, the Democrat from Hillsborough County, and Josie Tomcow, who's a Pasco County legislator who's running for now the Senate. And your vote is your voice. It's very important to not let any election get past you without voting. All right. So I think that's about it for us today. And tune in next week. Until then, stay tuned for Talking Animals with Duncan, followed by The Conversation. We gotta fight the powers that be. WMNF Tampa. I don't understand that.